again, everyone. I'm ending the week with the Leopardess, the general outline of the Leopardess here on the Revelation series. And we've been looking at the lion and the bear. No tigers. Lions, bears, and leopardesses. Oh, my. And people say to me, be nice. People want me to be a little kinder and gentler. But that's, you know, Paul says to let your words be filled with grace, yes, but seasoned with salt. In other words, you have to be able to taste this stuff. I can't have you going away wondering, well, I wonder what Zender thinks about religions. I can't have that. So I'm going to push you off the fence. Nobody reads a book of mine and says, I wonder what that guy was trying to say. That's my worst nightmare. If anybody read a book of mine and came up with that line, oh, Tony Nungesser used to make fun of me. He did this on purpose. I would give a talk at a conference. Tony Nungesser, one of the guys helping Dean Huff with the translation of the Concordant version of the Old Testament, he'd come up to me after a talk. I'd be coated in sweat. And he'd say, what were you trying to say? And it was a joke because he knew it would aggravate the crap out of me, and it did. That's the worst thing I can hear. What were you trying to say? That's why it's seasoned with salt. You taste food, it has no flavor. What's this food trying to say? What is this food? I don't even know what it is. So you add salt. It's got flavor. So when I say something, you know what I mean because I say it. I don't beat around the bush. Don't do that. Don't do it to me. I can't stand it. Don't change the story either. Stick with one story. Unless there's a legitimate reason you're changing, then say, man, I really changed my mind on this. Here's why. There was some kind of event or a catalyst, and you changed your mind. I love the line in Erin Brockovich. She's talking to Ed, the lawyer, in the movie Erin Brockovich. You know, they're fighting Pacific Gas and Electric. One of my favorite movies, you know this, besides The Wizard of Oz. And Ed's trying to explain something to her about why they need an extra lawyer on the case. And she gets so frustrated. She's very feisty, Julia Roberts is. She says, Jesus, Ed, make a point. I love that. Jesus, make a point. That's what I like to say. I won't say that. I'm not that rude, but part of me wants to do it. I see a t-shirt out that says, you're telling me this because... I love it. It's a t-shirt. You're telling me this because... All right, get to the point. Thank you. So I try to get to the point, which is why I haven't told you any information yet in the first 2 minutes of this video. Sorry about that. So... the Leopardess, general. No, I think that was helpful. Well, yeah, good. It's going to help you be bolder, more assured, more confident, more spicy, more salty. Good. I can't argue with any of that. I'm all for it. The Leopardess. Pay attention to this one because this is Islam. When we get next week to the specifics of the Islamic religion and how this was prophesied by Daniel, it's going to blow your mind. To the idolaters of Ephraim, Hosea says, I forgot I was going to look up the plating of the heart. I didn't do that. Plating of the heart. I'm not going to waste time doing it live here on this study. I'll have to save that for Monday. I never did that for you. I will be to them as a black lion. This is Hosea 13, verses 7 and 8. And as a leopard on the way will I regard. I will encounter them as a bereaved bear. You had those sound effects yesterday. Don't need to repeat those. And I will tear the plating of their heart. I'm going to tear the plating of your heart right out. And I will devour them there as a parent lion, the animal of the field shall rend them. So the leopardess is definitely associated with these other animals, and its chief characteristic is that it's intent on destruction. The leopard, though, is distinguished from these other beasts in that it is stealthy. I think this line from Hosea kind of says it. As a leopard on the way will I regard. There's regard. I can almost picture the leopard like thinking. It's thinking as it approaches. It's a very intelligent animal. It's lying in wait on the way. Lying in wait. Very stealthy. Silent. In another passage, the horses of the Chaldeans, they must have been good horses because they're compared to leopards in regard to their speed. Here's that passage. Habakkuk 1:8. and his horses are more fleet than leopards and sharper than evening wolves. Evening wolves. You got to watch out. Nothing as sharp as an evening wolf. The morning and afternoon wolves, dull as rocks. But those evening wolves, watch out. So more fleet than leopards. And we know the leopard is the fastest land mammal, is it not? No, it's not the elephant. No, I think it's the slowest. No, the three-toed sloth. But the leopard is very speedy. And this plays heavily when we're comparing it to Islam. So now, as an overview here, or should I say a recap, at the end of the week, we're recapping the general characteristics of the beasts of Daniel 7. We must remember that the figurative usages, I'm quoting A. Enoch here, of these animals in other contexts are not necessarily the same as in Daniel's vision. But here's the common denominator here. They're all intended to convey the notion of ferocious and dangerous enemies of mankind. Because they're coming after you. In all these passages, they're eating you, they're chasing you, they're lying in wait for you, and they're tearing the plating off of your frickin' heart for the love. Very dangerous animals. And this is the surface view of these animals, but I don't think we need to go any farther than that right now. And this agrees with this fact. Check this out. It agrees with the fact that they are, in this vision, the incarnation of evil spirits bent on destroying the worship of God in the earth. That's what they're put for. And again, these beasts don't appear as that. They appear as beasts to Daniel, but they're very pleasantly presented on earth today. But it's their intention I want you to look at now. Their intent. And this is also not stated. It's interesting, isn't it, then, that in the religions today, Islam, Christianity, that believe in eternal torment, it's in the back burner. Let's just stick with Christianity. Their intent is to keep you in their ranks. Their intent is to make you need them. And they're very stealthy about it because they use veiled threats. They used to overtly preach eternal torment, but they don't do that anymore. The crazy God who tortures you for eternity is locked up in the attic. They keep him away, but he's there if you look at their statements of faith. But the intention, and, you know, I can't say that this is their understood intention. I don't think there's any pastor I would go to in this town or in any town and say, is it your intent to destroy the worship of God in the earth? There's no way they would say yes to that question. No way. But Jim Corum, president of the Concordant Publishing Concern, once told me something. I'll never forget it. He says, a wolf in sheep's clothing is a wolf in sheep's clothing, whether it intends to be or not. The pastor, your pastor Dave down the road does not intend to destroy the worship of God in the earth, but that's exactly what he is doing. The Christian religion is a falsification. Islam is the next greatest falsification, because Buddhism, I'm getting ahead of myself, Buddhism and Hinduism, these aren't as false as Islam and Christianity, because I'm going to review this next week. Don't worry. This is important, because Islam and Christianity are departures from divine revelation. For instance, they both draw on Moses, Abraham, right? Am I right? I don't know anything about Islam. They're a departure. They're closer to the truth. Those Hindus over there and the Buddhists, they're just happy, crazy people, right? I don't mean anyone offense. All the world's crazy in a way. That's the sense I meant it. Maybe not. I guess they're a little crazier than most. I take that back. Crazy is not the word I want. They're very peaceful. They're very, is the word sanguine? Is that the word I want? Whereas Islam and Christianity, which are both to the west of Jerusalem, which is at the center, they're more volatile, religious. I know we still have a lion and a she-bear, but again, we're going to analyze the details next week. So none of these beasts, as they're presented, as they exist today, and these beasts do exist today, none of them know that they're intent on destroying. They certainly would not like to hear that they're represented in Scripture by ravenous, killing machines, beasts. Christianity doesn't want to hear that it's a monster so outrageous it has no natural counterpart, consisting of copper claws, iron teeth, and 10 horns, which will be 10 Western powers. Oops, gave that one away. So next week, the literal interpretations. These things are what Daniel saw, and he describes them. We're going to get into the details of each beast, and we're going to look at the literal interpretation, because as you know, the interpretation is literal. I don't even need to say literal interpretation. It's a redundancy. I just need to say interpretation. And you should know from our studies that that's literal. The thing John sees is figurative, or Daniel, John, or Daniel. The thing it represents, the interpretation, is always literal. And John then sees a wild beast coming again from the sea. And it's a composite of the four beasts of Daniel chapter 7. Have a great weekend.